Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Roundtable Pro Wrestling Podcast Network News. I am the boy of the franchise, Barry Double B Babbler. I am joined, of course, by the Drew Nicholas. And we're here live on the Roundtable Pro Wrestling Podcast, brought to you by BodySlam.net. And boy, we got a lot of news to talk about today, Drew. A lot of news.
It's just what usually ends up happening now. Every week we come here on a Saturday and there's a bunch of stuff to talk about.
So much stuff, man. The news never stops. God, it never stops. So
please slow down slightly. Just slow
down.
Yeah,
like give us a break, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, geez. But that's okay because it's keeping us well informed with a lot of amazing content that we can share with the Roundtable Pro Wrestling Podcast Network as well as BodySlam.net. So let's go ahead and let's talk about the rumor killer about the CMLL AAA. AEW drama going on right now in pro wrestling.
That's right. So it was reported a few days ago that when the CMLL partnership with AEW began, that meant that no Mexican wrestlers could be wrestling on shows with CMLL wrestlers. And Fightful Select has reported that that is actually not the case. That is a misconception. It was reported on Friday that part of the deal between CMLL and AEW is that on any television show that their talent appears on, no other Mexican wrestlers can appear. It doesn't matter if they work for AAA or not, or did in the past. No other Mexican wrestlers can appear. However, AEW sources claim that that is outright false. They pointed to Commander appearing on the January 31st episode of AEW Dynamite when the group from CMLL appeared for the first time. And beyond that, Penta was also scheduled to appear on AEW programming this week, but ended up running into travel issues. It was stated to Fightful that CMLL talent is not supposed to be booked in angles or matches with AAA talent. So this does not mean that AEW's Mexican wrestlers are unable to be on the same shows with CMLL wrestlers. This has to do with the CMLL AAA partnership thing, whatever's going on. AEW's wrestlers, regardless of race, nationality, anything, are allowed to be on the shows with CMLL wrestlers.
Well, see, that makes a lot more sense. And the reason why I'm saying this is because the AAA deal and the deal with CMLL, of course, they're rivals. It's like having AEW and WWE working on the same show. I totally get that. 1,000% get it. And this has been going on since, like, AAA is an offshoot of CMLL in a sense. There's CMLL, there's EMLL, and then there's AAA. But the whole thing with Commander is formerly of AAA's what is he, like the light heavyweight champion or something like that, AAA cruiserweight champion, whatever, whatnot. Of course you wouldn't have AAA guys facing CMLL guys. It doesn't make any sense. But in the grand scheme of things, if they're all working for AEW, like, there needs to be clear communication with the media. I mean, because we know the IWC is going to say what the IWC wants. They're just going to speculate. And that's one thing we don't do on this show. We don't speculate. We only come with the facts. That's so right. With that being said, it made no sense to me.
It didn't. You know, there's some media outlets out there right now who might not be getting all of the correct information based off of who they're talking to. And unfortunately, you know, I don't necessarily blame them if that's a source that they've gone to for information before and it's been correct. I don't blame the outlet for reporting something that they figured was true.
Yeah. I can see that. Well,
although that outlet did get a couple of things wrong this week, so
yeah, we're not going to point fingers at that person, but that person. Yeah. So let's go ahead and switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about TNA Wrestling. TNA Wrestling returns to Las Vegas with Rebellion. The pay-per-view will originate from the Palms Casino, Saturday, April 20th, 420, which is funny. Championship matches confirmed are back-to-back nights of action of pro wrestling, including both singles and tag team action. TNA Wrestling was set up to return to Las Vegas in this annual spring showcase, the Rebellion pay-per-view. They will also be there Saturday as well as Sunday night, April 21st, at the Palms for television tracks for TNA Impact on Access TV. Tickets are available right now, or they're going to go on sale. Well, yeah, today at 10 a.m. right now, literally right now, they're on sale. Ticketmaster.com. TNA Wrestling was last in Las Vegas in January for Hard to Kill, followed by Snake Eyes shows, two star-studded events that drew thousands of fans from around the world and set numerous company records. The Las Vegas show in January also featured the shocking arrival of Nick Nemeth, formerly known as Dolph Ziggler, and Ash by Elegance, formerly known as Dana Brooks from WWE. Insiders predict that the April show, including Rebellion, will feature a few more surprise appearances. So, with the situation going on with Impact, where I'm sorry, I keep saying Impact because I'm so used to calling it Impact.
I know.
The things that are going on with TNA Wrestling right now, they came back with, like, the rebranding came back with a huge success. And now they're back in Las Vegas. In my opinion, I think they should have went somewhere else, but that's just me. They're back in Las Vegas for another pay-per-view show. And with the drama going on, it's kind of hard to gauge what's going to really happen.
Yeah, it was very weird because we just reported it last week because it happened pretty recently. I think it was just in the beginning of this month that Scott D'Amore is no longer with TNA, which stunned everybody except Scott, who apparently knew that it was coming already.
Yeah.
But they just changed over from Impact to TNA. They had that huge show in the beginning of January. Everyone was so looking forward to how TNA was going to be under Scott. And then they released Scott.
And it was so weird because it's like, hey guys, we just had the biggest show of our company's career, our biggest show of our company's history. So many surprises, so much press, you know, it's so much positive stuff going on. Like, we're excited about this. Oh, by the way, the guy who helped do it, we're just going to go ahead and fire him.
Yeah, so TNA talent, it turns out, sent a letter to Anthem.
Oh, yeah.
Expressing their frustration that Scott was pushed out of TNA. And I am going to read that letter to you right now. It is right here. Len and Scott, TNA Impact is not just our employer and the company for which we work. It is a family. A family that each of us has grown to love and cherish and trust with our bodies and our careers. A family for which we deeply and that desire, above all else, to protect. We are deeply saddened by the decision to remove Scott D'Amore from TNA Impact family. Scott is a brilliant wrestling mind that has guided this company and has it positioned to take the next step upward in our industry. Scott is also so much more than this. He's a trusted friend, confidant, teacher, advisor, brother, and mentor to so many within the TNA Impact family. Scott has been the heart of the TNA Impact family for over two decades. And breaking off from that letter for a second, I didn't realize until the news came out that he was gone, that he was actually pretty much with the company since its inception.
Yeah, he started as part of Team Canada, and then he moved into a backstage producer role. Then he moved into a senior producer role, and then he moved into management, and then he just started running the whole goddamn show.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, it's so crazy. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why it took me by surprise. Like, the guy who's been running the show, the guy who brought you from the depths of hell, so to speak, you basically just say, hey, you know what, man, thanks for what you've done, but goodbye.
Right.
Totally shocked me.
So more of the letter, and it's a long letter, so I'm not going to read the entire thing, but there's some parts I think are important. A little bit later in the letter, we come to you to voice our concern for TNA Impact, our family, and its future and direction. We, like you, wish to safeguard what we have all worked and sweat and bled for to build. We want TNA Impact to grow and continue to be an enviable place for all professional wrestlers to work. We understand and appreciate that professional wrestling at its core is a business, and that the company must provide a fiscally responsible, financially viable product. At the same time, professional wrestling is uniquely situated. The business of professional wrestling is so much more than balance sheets, downloads, and ratings. It's very much, much more than ratings, ladies and gentlemen. The wrestling business is and must be its people, its characters, and its storylines. That is to say, there is no wrestling business without the wrestling creative vision and the right people bringing the creative vision to life. And I'll just give you the last little bit here. We recognize that we do not necessarily know all the facts or details around the decision to remove Scott. In life, there's always the rumors, the opinions, and somewhere in between, the truth. That sounds very familiar to something somebody says on this podcast.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
We rarely get to know which is which. It remains our hope and desire that everyone can set aside the past few days and any hurt feelings or unkind words that may have been exchanged, and meet to discuss a path forward that preserves the TNA Impact family we all hold so dearly. We remain steadfast and hopeful that this letter can be a first step to opening and keeping open, productive lines of communication to ensure the TNA Impact family continues to be a wonderful, unique place to work for years to come. We ask and implore you both to come together and create a resolution that will reunite this family once again.
So let me ask you this, Drew. What do you think they're going to accomplish with this letter? Let's just throw it out there 110%. What do you think they're going to accomplish by doing this?
Well, we don't know exactly who is involved with this letter. We just know that there are multiple members of the TNA roster and team overall who came together to formulate this letter to send to Anthem. So I would hope, and I don't know of like all the negative, like what was just said at the end there. I don't know what negative stuff has been said by other people towards, well, people within the TNA company itself towards Anthem for this move. But I would hope that what comes of this is they recognize that while Scott did not have the same vision of TNA as Anthem did, they can still realize that what Scott was able to do was create a really positive, uplifting atmosphere in the TNA locker rooms and amongst just not just the wrestlers, but the entire company. And it's beneficial for his creative vision, as they said in the letter, to be shown on television. So I would hope that Anthem at least sits down with everybody and they come to an amicable solution.
I mean, that would be great. That would be 1,000% great. I mean, man, you finally got what you wanted. Like, you're a viable company. People are starting to recognize, like, people are starting to notice you. You know what I mean? It's like you finally got the brass ring and then you throw it away. The one person that was doing the most. And then you bring in a person, and I'm not gonna say like how horrible the guy is or whatever, whatnot, but this is professional wrestling. Someone who knows professional wrestling should be running professional wrestling. You know,
exactly.
Like people, a lot of people say the downfall of WCW happened because people like Jim Herd. Jim Herd was a guy who knew nothing about wrestling. He was a lawyer. You know, knew nothing about professional wrestling, but knew about business. Business, you keep that on one side. Wrestling, you keep on the other side. That's why the WWE thing is really good right now, because you got the businessman who knows everything about business, and then you got Triple H, who knows everything about wrestling. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a perfect partner.
So Nick Hogan is like, Nick Hogan. Nick Khan's like the ultimate deal maker. The guy's like a shark. The guy's the ultimate deal maker. So it's perfect for him to be in charge of the financial and the business side. And Triple H has such a great mind for wrestling. It's perfect for him to be the greatest mind in wrestling on this side. Scott D'Amore, great mind for wrestling. Great mind for wrestling. Don't take that away from Impact Wrestling. I'm sorry, TNA. Don't take that away because now is not the time. You know what I mean? Now they finally got both oars in the water and they're rowing towards shore. And then you're going to throw them back out in the storm. Doesn't make any sense to me.
No, but that was the main thing why everyone was so confused. Because of what's going on with Vince McMahon right now and the Laurinaitis and then those people. As you hear somebody of prominent stature in a wrestling company is all of a sudden getting fired, you're thinking the worst.
Yeah, and people jumped right on it. The IWC jumped right on the fact, oh, maybe it's some allegations of him and someone else. And it's like, no, had nothing to do with it. So, and like I always say, there's your truth, there's your truth, my truth, and there's the truth. So somebody somewhere is going to be telling the truth. So speaking of the truth, have you guys watched the latest edition of SmackDown? Because with The Rock and Roman teaming up to the new bloodline and all this other stuff going on, this coming Saturday, 7 days from today, we have Elimination Chamber, and it's in Australia. The updated lineup goes as follows: WWE Women's World Championship, I assume, is going to be the main event. Rhea Ripley versus Nia Jax. The Women's Elimination Chamber match currently has Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch, Liv Morgan, Naomi, Tiffany Stratton, and a sixth person to be named. Coming up this Monday on Raw, the last chance, I believe it was the last chance battle royal the last slot. The winner of this Elimination Chamber match will have a match against the Women's World Champion at WrestleMania. We also have the Men's Elimination Chamber match. LA Knight, Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre, Kevin Owens, Randy Orton, and the current WWE United States Champion, Logan Paul, are in the Elimination Chamber. The winner will face Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. Night one or night two? Not sure. We also have the Undisputed Tag Team Champions, Judgment Day, defending their championships once again against DIY. And something that kind of threw me for a loop, you know, when you see something and then you hear it and you're like, well, does that really make sense? Nah, it doesn't make sense. But I mean, I guess it's going to make sense. The Grayson Waller effect. You're going to have Grayson Waller, a man from down under. Instead of having him wrestle in a match, you're having him do an interview segment with the current WWE World Heavyweight Champion, Seth freaking Rollins, and the American Nightmare, not the American Dream, like they said on Raw the other night, the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes. why not have The Rock and Roman here? Like, if you're trying to push this story, why not have The Rock and Roman appear at this thing too?
That's a good question. I mean, you're talking about a Perth,
yeah,
or Raw, yeah. The thing is it's, I feel like probably, you know, Rock is costing lots of money, as is Roman, and they want to preserve that storyline for post-Elimination Chamber. There's a lot of people were saying, like, oh, you know, there's so much focus on the Bloodline story that it seems like the Elimination Chamber is taking a back seat. But, I mean, I kind of did agree with that a little bit because nobody was talking about the Elimination Chamber before a few days ago.
Exactly, like Elimination Chamber. I almost forgot it was happening until Julian said, hey, we're doing the watch-along, correct? And I'm like, of what? He goes, the Elimination Chamber is at 2 a.m. on Saturday. I'm like, oh, I guess we are. So, ladies and gentlemen, we will be watching that live watch-along 2 a.m. next Saturday morning on the Roundtable Pro Wrestling Podcast.
Yeah, so I think that it's probably better to not have them there so that this way they can have the Grayson Waller effect segment be the continuation of the story while also selling the Elimination Chamber stories. Because if The Rock and Roman were there, I don't know if people would really care about the Elimination Chamber that much.
Yeah. Well, speaking of not really caring that much, on Monday, Monday Night Raw heads to the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. I'm assuming, I'm hoping this will be the main event, but we have main event Jey Uso challenging Gunther for the WWE Intercontinental Championship. We have R-Truth and The Miz, along with DIY, facing all four members of Judgment Day. We have a Women's Last Chance Eliminator Chamber Battle Royal. And we have Chad Gable versus Ivar. These are all matches set for Monday Night on Raw. As we know, SmackDown was taped. But we have Drew McIntyre versus LA Knight, Street Profits versus Authors of Pain. A new SmackDown signee, Bron Breakker, makes his in-ring debut. And we got Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate versus Dominic Mysterio and JD McDonough. That's going to be on Friday. But, you know, like I said, that was already taped. Not going to give you the spoilers because that's not what we do here. So, I mean, this is going to be a very interesting week. And I'm a little worried. I'm a little scared, so to speak. Because what else can happen this week to take away from the chamber? Like, so much stuff has happened that we almost forgot the chamber was going on. I mean, damn, you know what I mean? Rampage last night was great. I'm not gonna go over the results if you haven't watched it yet, but it was actually really good.
I know what
really
happened, good. But I didn't watch
yeah.
it.
Yeah, okay. A lot of cool things are happening. A new AEW signing is gonna be happening. I'm gonna go ahead and read the announcement. Because Queen Aminata, she finally got her first win on television. Thank God, she's so great. She won her first ever AEW television match, but she's been winning matches on Ring of Honor. So it is what it is. But she's officially All Elite. So
well deserved.
Shout out to her. Straight up workhorse, man. Single mom, bust her butt. Straight workhorce. I love it. Celebrating Black History Month by signing a black wrestler who deserves it. There's a lot of indie results from Illinois and California, and NXT stars are in town, taping SmackDown stuff. And there's just a lot of stuff, a lot of news, a lot of things going on. Mike Johnson from PW Insider has been dropping news all day long.
Yes. And also, there's another story from this week that needed to be debunked by Fightful Select that I wanted to mention regarding TNA.
That's what I was going to get to.
Yeah. So it turned out, another outlet reported that Tommy Dreamer was heading up creative in TNA with Scott's absence. But that's actually not the case. Because Fightful Select asked around throughout the week and Friday, and reports indicated Dreamer would be leading TNA creative. However, we're told that creative in TNA is unchanged and features Robert Evans, Hunter Johnson, Robert Evans, R.D. Evans, Hunter Johnson, Delirious, and Tommy Dreamer. And the newer thing, not that Tommy Dreamer is going to be the head of it, he is not, but they will now be supported by Gail Kim and Jorge Barbosa. Ariel Schnerer is overseeing all the content and will be working closely with new TNA president Anthony Ciccioni is how I'm deciding to pronounce it.
That's actually how you pronounce it.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah.
Good. We've not gotten your name wrong.
We've not messed up your name, at least not today. Yes.
For those unfamiliar, Ariel Schnerer, now I hope I'm saying Schnerer correctly. S-H-N-E-R-E-R, Schnerer. So that sounds about right. He is former GM of Fight Network, who helped spearhead the launch of the TNA Plus streaming service. He manages the distribution across Anthem, including securing TNA's global partnership with DAZN and the distribution of TNA streaming channel on digital platforms, including Pluto TV, Roku, and the like. So, Tommy Dreamer is not head of creative. There was still a team.
He's not head of creative. He's not the guy running things. Oh my God. Where are they? Where this news? Oh my God. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. We only talk facts on this show. We don't confirmed facts. My bad.
Yes. But I do like the addition of Gail Kim to the creative team. I think that's, you know, she's a great wrestling mind, and that would be great for TNA.
That would be
great. Jorge Barbosa is the senior producer for Anthem Sports and Entertainment and creator of the Diary series. I don't know what the Diary series is. I don't know if that's a TNA thing or something else.
Yeah. It's kind of like the, AEW is doing the road to whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Stuff like that, okay. So Jorge Barbosa and Gail Kim will be supporting the creative team headed by R.D. Evans, Delirious, and Tommy Dreamer. There is no head of TNA creative.
Thank you for clearing that up, because I couldn't wait to talk about that this week. But before we get to something long and drawn out, I want to read something very positive. Shout out to Mike Santana, formerly of Santana and Ortiz, formerly of the Inner Circle, the new LAX, whatever you want to call them. Okay. This was on his Twitter page. A year ago today was the day I hit rock bottom. The day that I realized it was time to turn around and face those demons that I ran from for years. The day that I made the decision to change, or I was going to lose my life, my family, my career, and everything I worked hard for. It was the day I decided to finally take care of myself after years of just taking care of others. I checked myself into rehab. And I can tell you here now, that is truly the greatest decision I've ever made in my life. I've learned more about myself in 30 days than in my lifetime. I learned to finally let go of the pain and trauma I carried around for so long. It taught me to genuinely love myself, to live and not just exist. Along with so many other great things, I also learned that my injury was God's greatest gift to me, because that gave me time to make me do what I had to do and who I am today. I can go on and on about my sobriety journey, because it's been exactly that. And maybe one day I'll open up more about it, but I just want to take the time to appreciate this accomplishment. I've actually struggled a bit with sharing this with the world, as it is something I dealt with in private and away from everyone. But if I can help give strength and hope to someone else with my story and journey, then so be it. We're taught that what helps us is giving away the gift that was freely given to us. So that's what I'll do whenever I can. I want to say thank you to God and my Father for continually guiding me, my amazing family for sticking by me and always seeing the light that I carried inside. Even through all the darkness, and all those who offered their support during those times, much love to all of you. Hashtag a day at a time. Hashtag recovery. Hashtag thankful. That right there, ladies and gentlemen, it takes a lot.
That was great.
It takes a lot for someone to admit that their faults. It takes a lot for someone to be able to stand up for themselves and go out there and do what it needs to be done to better themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
Shout out to Mike Santana, man. I'm proud of you. It takes a lot, man. And I always say it takes a village, it takes a village to raise a person. And responsibility is key. And he took responsibility for himself, and he saved himself. So, shout out to Mike Santana, man.
Yeah, anybody that takes the time out to really evaluate their lives, if they're going through something negative, and make a positive change for themselves, is a wonderful thing that needs to be shouted out. All right, so we want to talk about the crap.
Yeah, I want to get the positiveness out of the way. That way we can get into the dirt, the mud.
Yeah, very literally. So as we are going to, you know, at least my goal with this show every week is to bring you some sort of update on the Vince McMahon lawsuit stuff and all that garbage. So this week, Vice reporter Tim Marchman was on Brandon Thurston and Kevin Pollak's show on Post Wrestling and WrestleNomics and spoke about covering the Vince McMahon lawsuit and everything related to it. And he said on the show that a big factor that stops both victims and witnesses to crimes is fear of retaliation, either from an employer or the public. I think if you're someone who's on the inside who had knowledge of this, it's a very, very difficult decision to come forward knowing you're going to have people mad about it and mad at you as well. Tim Marchman has covered sex trafficking extensively for Vice and has been writing about McMahon since the major lawsuit was filed against him last month. While covering topics like sex trafficking isn't easy, Marchman has described his knowledge of wrestling as a plus for his coverage of Vince McMahon. Marchman said, "I definitely found the fact that I have some familiarity with wrestling is helpful." He said, "I don't think I'm an expert because I read the Wrestling Observer or anything like that, but I think there's a baseline of it if they're trying to explain something complicated and you can make it clear." Oh, I understand what you're talking about there. He has interviewed legal experts to figure out if the non-disclosure agreement that Grant signed is valid. He spoke to the attorney of McMahon co-defendant John Laurinaitis, who's claimed that his client was also a victim in this case. Forgive my chuckle. He revisited and uncovered statements from Ashley Massaro, which we mentioned in our new show last week. A wrestler who claimed she was raped by a U.S. Army doctor while on a business trip for the promotion, and WWE attempted to cover up the alleged incident. Along with more details of Massaro's alleged rape, Marchman published a previously unreleased statement from Massaro that alleges how McMahon sexually preyed upon talent. That's what we mentioned last week. Massaro's stories, while related to McMahon, provides something different to investigate as well, Marchman explained. That opens to me this other box that is kind of adjacent to but distinct from the Grant lawsuit, which is this true that Vince McMahon was sexually preying on wrestlers or people who work for WWE? And if so, what kind of potential liability does that open? How much has that been investigated internally? They've projected a clear belief that this is in the past. WWE did. Said Marchman, "These are things that happened before TKO took over, and that Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis are gone. There are things they don't know about because the people currently in charge weren't there, and there are things they can't really say much about because people who were accused of them weren't there." However, Marchman wants people to remember that WWE is a defendant in this case, not just Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis. A company as a whole is a defendant in the Janelle Grant lawsuit. So separating the company from allegations against McMahon and Laurinaitis might not be so easy. So Tim continued and said, "At face value, taking everything in the lawsuit, at the very least, several top executives would have known that Vince McMahon had an unqualified person who was his girlfriend, who he brought in and gave a fake job to," he said. "And for that kind of behavior to just be open and tolerated, it obviously suggests unflattering things about how WWE is run." So, and the story continues a little bit more, but the gist of it is that more things are definitely going to come out about this, and more people are most likely going to be implicated because as we saw in the original lawsuit, Janelle Grant's lawsuit, there's like three or four corporate officers, there's talent, there's a doctor, you know, it gets really deep into the WWE business, how many people were probably aware of a lot of things that Vince McMahon was doing and never reported it.
There's so many people, like, you know, the whole saying is shit rolls downhill. Well, it's rolling downhill now because there's so much stuff that has gone on. You cannot deny this, dude. You cannot deny this. Like, someone knew something. A lot of people knew something. And allegedly names are going to be dropped and people are going to know who's involved with this. And like I said, it's a horrible story. And it seems like it keeps getting more and more horrible day after day after day.
Yeah.
So
really unfortunate.
It is. It's crazy. But today, today is Saturday, February 17th. So every Saturday, I'm going to go out and I'm going to pull some information as to what happened today
in the history. I'm excited. I like this segment. Let's do it.
So let's go to the beginning. Because I saw this and it struck me as important to me because I know this person. He helped mentor me when I first got into this business. I actually gave my first alcoholic drink. 1975, the WWF ran a show at the Madison Square Garden in New York, and the following results were there. Manny Soto and Paul Sanchez defeated Jack Evans, not that Jack Evans, and Johnny Ross. Victor Rivera defeated Hans Schroeder. Tony Garea and Dean Lowe defeated Killer Kowalski and Bobby Duncombe Jr. by DQ. Pedro Morales defeated Butcher Vachon. Jimmy and Johnny Valiant defeated Gorilla Monsoon and Chief Day Strongbow to retain the WWF Tag Team Championships. And Spiros Agnew defeated WWF World Champion Bruno Sammartino by disqualification. Now, where did I see it? I want to read this one because, yeah, here we go right here. 1964, WWF ran a Madison Square Garden show where we had Skylo Lowe and Billy the Kid defeat Sonny Boy Cassidy and Farmer Pete. Don McLarity defeated Magnificent Maurice. Cowboy Bill Watts defeated Klondike Bill. Hans Moore defeated Gino Brito. And my friend, Dr. Jerry Graham, defeated Tony Marino. Bobo Brazil and Argentina Apollo defeated Killer Kowalski and Gorilla Monsoon. Bruno Sammartino defeated the Giant Baba with a backbreaker. Okay. Another Madison Square Garden show featured the likes of Randy Macho Man Savage and Hulk Hogan squaring off in the main event.
The Mega Power.
Against each other. Lethal Lenny Poffo versus Rene Goulet. King Tonga, Haku, or Ming faced Les Thornton. The Hart Foundation defeated the Killer Bees. King Kong Bundy faced George Wells. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and the Magnificent Morocco had a martial arts match. Barry O. And this goes out to you, Chemical Julian. Happy birthday, by the way, Mr. Julian Smith.
Happy birthday, Julian.
This goes out to him because he sent me a message one day, and he says, bro, I was yesterday years old when I realized that Barry Orton was Randy Orton's uncle. So Barry O wrestled Tony Atlas. Adrian Adonis, the adorable Adrian Adonis, defeated George Animal Steel. Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik defeated Corporal Kirschner and Dan Spivey. WWF World Champion Hulk Hogan defeated Intercontinental Champion Randy Savage in a lumberjack match, which saw George Animal Steel trip Randy Savage and tripped Randy Savage, leading to Hulk Hogan's leg drop for the win. Only the world title was on the line. Lex Luger defeats Johnny B. Badd for the WCW World Television title in Baltimore. Non-televised match. I don't understand why a television title match was non-televised, but whatever. In 1996, ECW ran Cyber Slam. We had Judge Dredd and Bad Crew. We had Taz defeated Joel Hartgood. We had Brian Pillman make his ECW debut and cut an obscenity-laced promo against Eric Bischoff, claiming he had been fired. God. You know the whole story about Bischoff firing Pillman, going on to ECW, and then Pillman screwing them both by going WWE. Shane Douglas defeated Cactus Jack, Mankind, Mick Foley. Tuco Scorpio defeated Sabu to retain the ECW Television Championship. We had a match where Mikey Whipwreck was handcuffed to, oh, no, that was something else. Raven defeated the Sandman with a DDT on the chair. A DDT wins a match. Beautiful. Remember when those things happened? When it wasn't just a setup move for 500 super kicks? Psycho Sid Vicious in 1997 defeated Bret the Hitman Hart for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship during a live edition of Raw from Nashville, Tennessee, when Stone Cold Steve Austin came in and slid a chair to Bret Hart, which allowed Sid to powerbomb Hart for the win, ending Hart's fourth title reign, only one day after winning the championship in a fatal four-way pay-per-view. One day as champion. And Sid beats him. We have Prince Iaukea defeat Lord Steven Regal, William Regal, for the World Television title, ending Regal's third reign as a television champion at WCW. And last but not least, the WWF held a pay-per-view, No Way Out, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, highlighted by the entrance of the New World Order to the WWF.
Wow.
The NWO showed up in WWF. Crazy. Just a lot of stuff happened today. The Rock beat The Undertaker in 17 minutes and 23 seconds. Kurt Angle defeated Triple H today. WrestleMania for the WrestleMania World title shot. Chris Jericho defeated Stone Cold Steve Austin to retain the Undisputed title. The infamous backstage promo with the New World Order and The Rock. Well, then, you know, when Hogan comes in and goes, "Hey, man, that's The Rock, bro. That's The Rock. Can I get a picture for my son?" And The Rock poses with him, takes a picture, and The Rock goes, "Oh, yeah, this is, you know, some people's taste, right? Ha, ha, ha." And The Rock totally blasts all three of them. It was such a great promo.
I gotta go back and watch that.
Yeah, such a great promo. We also have, in history, Chavo Guerrero taking on CM Punk for the ECW Championship.
Oh.
Punk defeated him with the GTS. Crazy. But Chavo Guerrero rolled him up, hit a frog splash, 1-2-3. They restarted the match. Damn, man. A lot of great things happened today.
Yeah.
A lot of great things happened today. The point I'm making is sometimes really horrible shit happens, but then some really cool historic things happen.
Yes, you have to mask the bad stuff with the good stuff sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we also had that infamous Big Show versus Floyd Mayweather fight.
That was on this day.
That was on this day.
Oh my goodness.
Randy Orton versus John Cena for the WWE Championship was on this day. Man, for Jeff Hardy. What,
their 20th match or their 700th match?
Oh, who knows? Who knows? But yeah, ECW's broadcast on Sci-Fi Network happened today. Like, a lot of things in history happened today, man. Like, I can go on forever with all of the things that happened. Literally, like, this list has so many events that happened today. But one thing that we do know that happened today was that this show aired on the BuySam.net network. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us here on the Roundtable Network News. For the Drew Nicholas, I'm the Franchise, and we will see you when we see you.